Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? No one's buying that. Jack Kerwin here today. L. Martin will be back in Friday. And for the rest of the week, the inmates, I mean production assistants, are running the asylum, I mean radio show. So, lot to get to today, folks. Should be a great show. Starting off with probably the biggest topic of the weekend coming out of Detroit sports. Alan Trammell and Jack Morris, Hall of Fame inductions yesterday. Long overdue, I'd say. You know, this has been a topic for the last several years. And it's good to finally see him get in there. And Katie Strang for The Athletic wrote a really good piece about Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker's connection and coming up through the big leagues together. And I'll read you some of that. So, should be a lot of fun. And then, MSU football topic. You know, I saw Matt Sheehan tweeted something really interesting the other day about some players to watch for this MSU football team in 2018. I'll kind of give you my take on it. A couple of big players who I think could be X factors. You know, a guy who might kind of come out of nowhere and be a real impactful player for MSU, as well as some guys you shouldn't forget about, you know, coming off solid seasons last year and looking to build off those. And then we'll get to weekend winners. And LeGarrette Blount leaving practice yesterday for the Lions with an injury. He got cleared to play today. But I got a question for you regarding Matt Patricia's style of practice during training camp. We saw Marvin Jones go down a couple days ago as well. So I got a question for you there as well. Number of ways in which you can chime in your opinion, 517-355-WKAR is the phone number. On Twitter, you can tweet me directly, Jack Kerwin at jkerlose, J-K-I-R-L-O-S-E, or tweet the show directly at WKAR_sports. So a lot to get to today. Let's not waste any time. Let's get in to your current sports quick hit headliners. So, like we just talked about in the intro, Alan Trammell and Jack Morris have been inducted into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. And there might not be a lot to be happy about if you're a Tigers fan right now, but seeing those two former Tigers being immortalized in Coopertown's got to be a great feeling. Alan Trammell and Jack Morris both were inducted yesterday, as I spoke about earlier. They both gave their speeches, which we'll talk about later. And this gave chills to the audience as they described the process of learning that they were inducted. Kareem Walker, running back for the University of Michigan, has left the program. One of the participants in Jim Harbaugh's Signing of the Stars event as a member of Michigan's 2016 recruiting class will be playing elsewhere this season. Fort Scott Community College head coach Cale Pick told reporters at the recent Kansas Jayhawk Community College Conference Football Media Day event that Walker has signed to play with Fort Scott for the 2018 season. Walker sat out his first season in Ann Arbor due to academic issues, but was able to get back on the field for the 2017 campaign, and he played in 5 games last season, tallying 20 rushing attempts, for 68 yards and a touchdown. Interesting story with Kareem. You know, really highly touted recruit out of high school, and just never made his mark at U of M, so we'll wish him the best of luck elsewhere. Liverpool FC and Manchester United will be coming to Ann Arbor for a game later in the summer. Alec?
All right, so Premier League powers Liverpool and Manchester United faced off in the Big House this past Saturday. Daniel Sturridge scored his first Liverpool goal for 8 months, and Jadon Sancho netted on his debut off a disgusting bicycle kick as Jurgen Klopp's side beat Manchester United 4-1 in Michigan. Sturridge, who spent the second half of last season on loan at West Brom, came on in the second half to put Liverpool ahead in front of 101,000 fans at the University of Michigan's Big House after Sadio Mane's penalty and an Andreas Pereira free kick had canceled each other out. Shayi Oho scored another penalty soon afterwards before Shaqiri, a $13 million signing summer from Stoke, scored with an acrobatic scissor kick to give Liverpool further ahead in their preseason preparations. A comfortable victory over a young and inexperienced United team.
Great stuff, Alec. Great stuff. My bad as well. Game was last week. Last Saturday, I'm sorry. Neymar admits to exaggerations. Alec Rayo, once again, take it away.
All right, so there are many ways to admit that you exaggerated on something. An ad is probably one of the last places you'd expect someone to admit that. Now, this move was done by Neymar after he admitted he exaggerated some of his reactions after being fouled during the World Cup in Russia. The Brazilian also said in a video published Sunday by one of his sponsors that he is now a changed man after all the criticism he received at home and abroad. I quote, "You may think I exaggerate, and sometimes I do exaggerate, but the truth is I suffer on the pitch," end quote, Neymar said in the ad. "You may think I fall too much, but the truth is I did not fall. I fell apart," he said, in a reference to Brazil's quarterfinals elimination against Belgium. Quote, "I took long to accept your criticism. I took long to look at myself in the mirror and become a new man."
Great stuff. A little bit more somber topic here. Martavius Carter, Grand Valley State's all-time leading rusher, was hospitalized and put in critical condition yesterday after he was shot at an East Chicago gas station. According to the police report, East Chicago Detective Sergeant Terrence Fife said the shooting took place late Saturday night or early Sunday morning at the Fuel Star gas station near Kennedy Avenue and 149th Street. A medico-legal death investigation team was dispatched at 12:58 a.m. to St. Catherine Hospital in East Chicago, the Times said. Carter had a tremendous 2016 season as he led all of Division II in rushing yards and rushing touchdowns with 1,908 and 20, respectively. He was an All-American and finished 5th in voting for the Harlan Hill Award as the D2 National Player of the Year. Lions training camp opens in Allen Park. Matt Patricia felt like a kid on early Christmas morning when he talked about the beginning of the Detroit Lions training camp. When the Lions put full pads on for the first time in training camp for what the first-year coach called the most exciting day of the year, and I got to agree, I'm ready for football to be back. I don't know about you boys. After 2 days of practice in shorts and jerseys, the Lions turned up the physicality on day 3 of camp on Sunday. There were pass rush drills and half line drills and even a modified version of the Oklahoma drill where two players lay on their back on either side of the numbers, then spring up to their feet at the whistle for thud up tackle. Important to note that this drill was never utilized by Jim Caldwell, and anyone that has ever played football, myself included, can comment that it is not a fun drill. It's fun when you're tackling the guy. When you're the ball carrier, not so fun. The energy, cornerback Tease Tabor said. Coach cranked it up a little bit. It was a good day. Furthermore, from Lions training camp, LeGarrette Blount leaves camp with an injury. Not all positives came out of the training camp as the Detroit Lions revamped running game took a hit Sunday when back LeGarrette Blount left practice early with an undisclosed injury. It's unclear what exactly happened, but Blount headed for the locker room shortly after Detroit went through a couple rounds of Oklahoma drills. He was walking under his own power, though, escorted by a trainer. Blount is expected to be in the mix to lead Detroit's new-look running back core as he's repped as the number one back since joining the club in the spring and will shoulder the bulk of the power and short yardage work. This morning, Blount was cleared to play, and he'll be able to participate in full contact practices. Detroit Lions are looking to get a nice 1-2 punch between LeGarrette Blount and Kerryon Johnson, with Theo Riddick catching passes out of the backfield. All right, the Detroit Tigers were topped in a 3-game set, and they looked dismal as they lost 8-1 to the AL Central leading Cleveland Indians yesterday. Jordan Zimmerman's run of strong starts appears to have run out. The Tigers veteran gave up 5 runs on 6 hits, including 2 home runs in an 8-1 loss to the Cleveland Indians Sunday afternoon at Comerica Park. It was his worst start since a rainy afternoon in Pittsburgh, April 25th. Zimmerman posted a 1.22 ERA in 6 starts after that outing, but in his last 3 outings, including Sunday, he's given up 13 earned runs in 14 and two-thirds innings. Woof. He's allowed 2 home runs in each of the 3 games. The Tigers managed only 1 run off Indian starter Corey Kluber. Leadoff man Leonis Martin reached on a bunt single in the first, advanced to third on Nico Goodrum's double, and then scored on a ground out. The NFL tells Jerry Jones to shut up. The NFL issued a gag order for Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones as he was instructed to stop talking about the NFL's current national anthem debate. Jones said that his players will be on the sideline and standing for the anthem, ignoring both the fact that the NFL's anthem policy 2.0 permits players to stay in the locker room and the fact that the NFL and NFL Players Association may negotiate an anthem policy 3.0 that preserves in some way the players' right to protest during the anthem. Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott and running back Zeke Elliott both voiced their support for Jones's policy. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please call at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Share what's on your mind. All right, let's keep it pushing. So let's get started. First topic for today. As we spoke about earlier, Alan Trammell and Jack Morris have been inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. And Katie Strang wrote a great article from The Athletic. Anyone who follows The Athletic knows Katie is an A1 writer. Absolute great coverage of the Detroit Tigers. And she wrote a great piece about, for all those years, it was Lou and Tram. The journey of Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell and kind of how they came up together. And played an integral role on the Tigers' 1984 World Series team as the two middle infielders. One of my favorite takeaways from yesterday's ceremony was when Trammell said during his speech, "My whole career I have been linked with one person." And the camera cut away to Lou Whitaker in the crowd, smiling with sunglasses and a plaid newsboy hat. For 19 years, Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell were the middle infielders for the Detroit Tigers, and that is the longest-running double-play combination in the history of the sport. The two were called up to the big leagues from AA on the same day and played in their first big league ball game at Fenway Park on the same day. They both got hits off the same pitcher, Reggie Cleveland, in their first major league at-bats. And they both got the last hits of their careers off the same pitcher, Mike Fetters. So I just thought this whole story was very interesting. As well, Lou Whitaker belongs next to Alan Trammell in the Hall of Fame as an article from Cliff Corcoran on The Athletic. And I want to know your thoughts on it. Do you think Lou Whitaker belongs in the Hall of Fame with Alan Trammell? Do you have a favorite memory of Tram or of Jack Morris or any of these guys? I remember seeing a stat earlier today. Jack Morris in his MLB career, 135 complete games. I mean, that's incredible. So if you have a favorite thought from, you know, the Tigers' 1984 World Series run or all the years that the two spent together, call in 517-355-9527. We'd love to hear from you. That's 517-355-WKAR. You know, and as we turn the clock forward to 2018, you know, as it pertains to the Detroit Tigers, probably not as great of a story as 1984, as the team is in heavy rebuild mode looking to sell off some assets, and the trade deadline is approaching tomorrow. As far as the trade deadline is concerned, I think the Tigers, for the most part, should actually stand pat, because with the exception of really Francisco Liriano, there's really not anybody that is on an expiring contract for the Tigers that they're looking to move. So, for me, some of these guys, Mike Fiers, you know, Jose Iglesias especially, I don't really think there's much of a market for Jose at this point in time. The Tigers should hang on to some of these assets and look to move them at a later date. Shane Green as well. Just doesn't appear to be a big market to move these guys right now. I'd hang on to them, you know, maybe find something in winter meetings. Maybe second trade deadline in August could be a good opportunity to move some of these guys. But for me, I'd stand pat right now. Alec Rio, you got any thoughts on this issue?
The Tigers are definitely motivated to trade Jose Iglesias away. But as you said, there isn't really much of a market. Like, and not many teams are looking for a middle infielder like Jose Iglesias. He is a very star-studded defenseman. He can get all those crazy plays that you'd see on SC's top 10. One team that I could definitely see him being traded to is Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Pirates. He will be a free agent after the season, and really there aren't any contending teams who need an everyday shortstop like Jose Iglesias, but he's viewed as a late-inning defensive replacement and adds depth to a team. And even though a player like Jose Iglesias won't bring a big haul in return, I still think that he's still a key player for the Tigers.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. And you know what, to your point, any contending team looking to acquire Jose Iglesias, he wouldn't be playing in a starting role for them. Absolutely not. You know, in a World Series game, you're not going to be starting Jose Iglesias at shortstop. You need a little bit more offense out of that shortstop position. So, you know what, I agree with that take as well. And any of these other guys, Leonis Martin, you know, Mike Fiers, I'd hang on to him for now. I just think there could be a better offer available at a later time. But Francisco Liriano, you know, he's kind of an interesting story just because he's on an expiring contract. You know, he's the one guy that I think the Tigers should look to move if at all possible. The problem is he just hasn't been, in his last few starts, he hasn't been the same pitcher he was to start the year. And any team that's looking to contend may view him as more of a late-inning situational reliever than a starting pitcher. You know, he's had great numbers against lefties this year, you know, lefty-on-lefty matchups, but I just don't see him, you know, taking over as a starter for any type of playoff team. So, you know, he may not have the greatest value, but with that being said, I'd still expect the Tigers to inquire to all teams who are looking to acquire a late-inning left-handed reliever, and hopefully they can get something for him, try to expedite this rebuild. I've been impressed with Al Avila's move so far as GM. I like the move to bring in Franklin Perez and Daz Cameron and Jake Rogers in exchange for Justin Verlander. Seems like a good trade at this point in time. You know, the same can be said for the Alex Avila-Justin Wilson deal that brought in Jamer Candelario, although he's been in a real rough patch lately, as well as Isaac Paredes, who's one of the Tigers' most exciting young prospects, I'd say. I think the kid's only 19, and he's hitting with great power and low minor ball. So, Alec, your thoughts on Francisco Liriano being moved?
I think that they should move him because, like, he's still a veteran left-hander on an expiring deal, and he could be used in multiple ways as, like, a lefty reliever or, like, in starting depth. He, like you said, he has dominated left-handers this year. He moved into a relief role with the Astros en route to the World Series championship. Even though they won't get that much in return for Liriano, I would definitely trade him if I had the opportunity to, because he still has something left on his contract. But I would expect that they would trade him, and honestly, I think that he would be the only player being traded.
Yeah, you know what? I think two other names that are really interesting in terms of trade talks. You've kind of heard these names, you know, all quiet on the Western Front now for the Tigers, but Nick Castellanos and Mike Fulmer as well. Al Avila spoke probably, I want to say, a week ago, maybe a week and a half ago, and said that they're not shopping either of these players, but they are listening to offers, and I think that's the right move. You know, Mike Fulmer has not had the same year this year that he's had in years past, really the last two seasons. So I think it'd be wise for the Tigers to wait a little bit with Fulmer, because I'm absolutely in favor of them moving him to a team like the Yankees in exchange for, you know, a group of prospects that can really help expedite the rebuild, just because I think right now you've kind of seen the last 2 years, less so this year, but the last 2 years, you've really seen greatness from Michael Fulmer on a team that's just not ready to be great. So I would be in favor of moving him, but not at the current time, just because I want to give him an opportunity to rebound, kind of like Justin Verlander was able to do last season before being traded, just because he kind of started rough last season, was able to get it going before the August trade deadline, the second one, and the Tigers were able to get a nice haul for him. So for me, as Fulmer's concerned, I would stand pat right now. And Nick Castellanos is the other interesting target there. And I kind of feel the same way, just because, you know, I don't know. He's right field for the Tigers right now, but I can't see a contending team putting him in right field, just because I think he struggles defensively, and I don't think he hits for enough power. Yes, his average is very good, but I'm not sure he hits for enough power to where I would justify putting him at first base if I'm a contending team. So I'd hope that Nick's power numbers, can get up a little bit so the Tigers could possibly get something for him, or even move him to first base, as the Tigers might see him as a kind of a key piece in their own rebuild as they look to contend in future years. So, you know, great topic there. You know, and what do you think the Tigers should do at the trade deadline? 517-355-9527. What are your thoughts on Michael Fulmer and Nick Castellanos as to whether the Tigers should move them or not? Again, the phone number is 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can tweet me directly at Jay Kirlose, excuse me, J-K-I-R-L-O-S-E. So let's shift gears here a little bit. I saw a really interesting topic, I want to say last weekend, regarding MSU football. And right now I want my other two PAs, Alec Rio and Connor Mathis, to kind of get their wheels turning here on who they think their submissions might be. But, you know, I thought it was an interesting topic as to who you're breakout guy, your comeback kid, your rising star, your don't forget about player, your need to rebound player, your dark horse player, and your under the radar player are for the Michigan State football team in the 2018 season. Now, naturally, I wouldn't expect anyone to list me, you know, seven players that they expect to, you know, take a stride or, you know, rebound or kind of come out of nowhere under the radar, but if you have a guy who really fits the bill for any of those seven categories, a breakout guy, a comeback kid, a rising star, a don't forget about, a needs to rebound player, a dark horse, or an under the radar player, you know, I'd love to hear from you. 517-355-9527. Get your calls in as well for that topic. So what I want to do here first is we'll hit our first break. And then after that, I'll kind of give you my thoughts on the topic, and I'll go to Alec Rio and Connor Mathis, my man behind the glass, as well, as to what their thoughts are. So let's hit our first break, and when we come back, we'll touch on this Michigan State football topic. You're listening to Current Sports. Welcome back. So like I talked about earlier, you know, great topic. You know, this was initially a U of M topic, actually, in terms of their football team. But, you know, we'll change it up a little bit and we'll make it an MSU topic. So seven categories here: breakout guy, comeback kid, rising star, don't forget about, a player who needs to rebound, a dark horse player, and an under the radar player for the 2018 season. Love to hear from you if you have any opinion on who any of those could be really for MSU going forward in 2018, and I'll give you a couple of my thoughts. So for me, I think a real, we'll say a breakout guy for me could be Jacob Ponashuk, you know, defensive end, true freshman last season, played sparingly, but I was impressed with what I saw, and naturally, the Spartans are going to have an opening at that position with Demetrius Cooper graduating, and I think he's a guy who can really fill the void opposite Kenny Willekes. You know, The Spartans can always look to get more pass rush, and, you know, there will be a lot of, I don't want to say schemes, but a lot of plays where they'll blitz linebackers as well, just trying to get more pressure on the quarterback. And I think for me, Jacob Ponoshuk and really Brandon Randall, whether he plays outside linebacker or as more of a defensive end role, I suppose, either of them could really be a breakout guy for the Spartan team simply because, well, they have a need at pass rush right now, I'd say. So, you know, those are two guys I'd really watch out for. And then a guy I'd say not to forget about for me is Cam Chambers. You know, Cam Chambers has really had an interesting story ever since getting to MSU because, you know, really highly touted recruit. And he's just struggled to see the field in his first couple of years at MSU. And, you know, I thought I think he's actually looked pretty good when he's gotten in. He's made some plays, I think, on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, it must be in practice. Guys like Cody White, you know, Hunter Risen last year is obviously not with the team anymore. But guys like that obviously are just, they must be winning more reps than him because they're getting more playing time. And those guys have really made the most of their opportunities. So Cam Chambers, I don't think he's played bad by any means. But my guess is he just hasn't had much of an opportunity to see the field. So those are really my two big takeaways. Alec Rio, you got one for me?
Okay, so I think who's going to tear it up this year? Definitely Felton Davis III. He's coming on his senior year. He came off a 776-yard season last season and doesn't look to stop anytime soon. He's going to be under Brian Lewerke. He's going to be playing alongside him, and Brian Lewerke is going to be giving up those passes to him. He's his number one wide receiver, so I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be an offensive force come this season, especially with who we're playing against. We have a couple non-conference teams that Felton Davis will... He will take advantage of that, and he will. He has studied the film, I'm assuming, for the conference teams, as in Penn State, Ohio State, you know, U of M, those games. And the person that needs to rebound, I believe, is Joe Reschke. John Reschke. He definitely needs to rebound after what had happened. Obviously, he deserves that punishment, and his teammates are way more forgiving than honestly what I'd expect most teams to be.
Sure.
He's skating on incredibly thin ice, and I think that if he doesn't perform nearly as well as anyone expects him to, then I think he's going to get cut.
Interesting. So Felton Davis is your rising star, you'd say?
Well, he's already been rising,
right,
and I think he's
right.
just going to keep rising. Just continue absolutely. Rising, absolutely.
Absolutely. And so when you say needs to rebound with John Reschke, that's interesting because you don't bring up from a field standpoint necessarily, but just in terms of earning the trust of his teammates back and rebounding as a good locker room guy.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're thinking. That's interesting, interesting. Connor, any thoughts?
I would say it's not really as big as a rebound per se, but I think they do need to have a good season. I think L.J. Scott absolutely needs it. The fumbling issues last year. I mean, it was one of those things where he was a really good player, but it was one of those things where like you could tell like the stadium would be a bit on edge or like when he had the ball in certain situations. Again, it's not something like where it's like he had a bad season last year by any means, but it's definitely something to improve on, especially since he's eyeing an NFL, a shot at the NFL.
Great point.
And you just can't have those fumble as a running back. You can't have those fumbling issues and make it in the NFL. So I think that's something that he needs to correct. For breakout, I'm going to go with not player, but a position group. I think the secondary part of the defense, I think that is going to be, I think that's going to be on par with the old no fly zone. I've said it before. I think this Michigan State defense this year could be the best defense that the Spartans have had since Narduzzi left. So I'm really excited to see that aspect of it too. And I kind of agree with Alec over here about Felton Davis. Like last year he made his impact. You know, we always talk about how Michigan State's got this chip on their shoulder. Felton Davis is on. I didn't see him on any of the big receiver awards watch list. He's already a big receiver, and I think teams are going to have a hard time controlling him.
Yeah, great point by you for sure. You know what I think is really interesting when you bring up the Michigan State secondary is all four guys are returning. Josiah Scott, Justin Lane, your two corners, and Kari Willis and David Dowell, your two safeties as well. And you got two freshmen who Mark D'Antonio appears to be really high on, and Kalon Gervin and Xavier Henderson. And I love the new redshirt rules that a true freshman is allowed to play up to four games without burning his freshman season. And I think it'll be really interesting early in the season to see what those two young guys especially have for this defense. Because the way I see it, you're absolutely right. This secondary is great. And the only way Kalon Gervin and Xavier Henderson are going to get an opportunity will be if they are good enough to find their way onto the field. So I think it's going to be awesome. Our man behind the glass, Ian Hawley, has just entered the studio. Ian, do you have any thoughts on this list? I'll give you a minute to collect your thoughts, but if you have any of your thoughts on who you think could be a breakout guy, a comeback kid, a rising star, a player we shouldn't forget about, a player who needs to rebound, a dark horse, or an under-the-radar player, I'd love to get your opinion as well.
Players we should watch, definitely LJ Scott and Connor, or sorry, not Connor Cook, Brian Lewerke. Sure. They're two Heisman hopefuls this year. I'd say Lewerke has a better shot than Scott just based on his current track record. But you never know. LJ Scott could be one of those rebound players that we're looking at as well. I'd say for comeback kid, it definitely has to be, his name escapes me. The guy who they just invited back to the team,
John Reschke. Reschke. Alec just touched on that.
Yep. I was going to say, if there's, if there ever was a comeback story, it would be this guy. Other than that, I have no opinions to give, but thank you for including me today.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's interesting. So, when you guys bring up John Reschke, it's not really from a player standpoint. It's more of from a teammate standpoint. I think that's a really interesting spin on this list. I got one as well for you for needs to rebound. And kind of like Connor said, it's not really a player. It's more of a position. I'd say it's the tight end group. Just because, and this really actually could be needs to rebound or a breakout guy. Because for me, if you want to look at Matt Sokal, Matt Sokal really needs to rebound after having a tough year last year, not the best hands, just all around just a tough year, and we didn't get much production from our tight end group. But, either in order for this offense to get to where it truly wants to go, I think they need to see an increase in production from their tight end unit. And that'll either include Matt Sokal taking a step forward or a breakout guy like Matt Dotson or Noah Davis coming in and really adding a new dimension to the offense as well from their perspective. So I think that's really another position group to watch just because I think that one can go a couple different ways. I think that's really interesting just because, Sokol's been the guy and he's a guy on the Mark D'Antonio's leadership council. So he's certainly looked at as he's a well-respected guy in the locker room. But can he take that next step as a player, as a tight end on this team? So that should be an interesting one to watch out for. Under the radar, I suppose, for me, I'm not really sure if these guys are under the radar, but Mike Panishuk and Raekwon Williams, it's really hard to look past how effective those two guys are in the middle of Michigan State's defensive line, just how great they are at stopping the run. And really, it's a three-man rotation. You put Naquan Jones in there as well. He can provide some good depth. So I think that's a really under-the-radar position, at least from my perspective, because when I think of the best players on MSU's defense, I think of Joe Bocci. I think of Justin Lane. I think of Kenny Willekes as well. I don't really think of the interior defensive linemen, Mike Panishuk, Raekwon Williams, Naquan Jones. But, those guys are certainly very important pieces. They do a lot to stop the run, and that was something Michigan State was great at last season, obviously. Saquon Barkley came to Spartan Stadium, and I think he finished the game with something like 70 yards from scrimmage with half of it coming on one play. Spartans do a great job to stop the run, and those two guys are right in the middle of that. Don't forget about maybe the wide receiver core just because, I already talked about Cam Chambers, but wide receiver core as a whole just because of how good they are and the depth we have there with Felton Davis and Darryl Stewart and Cody White. And, even though we've had some attrition, Hunter Risen's now at Kansas State and Tristan Jackson's now at Syracuse, this still is quite possibly the best core on the team, I'd say, right? Would you agree, Connor?
Yeah, the wide receiver core I think is another one that we have is an underrated group as a whole. There's a good depth. We saw last year it was Cody was White is White Hair, isn't it? Yeah,
Cody White.
NFL, but Cody White was a breakout guy last year. Another guy who's kind of a little bit bigger. I think Lewerke, he's one of Lewerke's favorite targets, and another underappreciated or underrated player we could watch for breakout is Connor Hayward. He made the move to running back, and if you watch the spring game, he's a very interesting runner. Like LJ is definitely a lot of power. He's got a little bit of that finesse, but Connor Hayward just brings something different. So for situational runs, I think he could be a big candidate for those. And then the other thing too, he's a tight end background, and he's got pretty good hands. So you know, it's another just another threat to have out there. I think he could see like an expanded role because, you know, even last year, like LJ still had the majority of touches, but there was still those times where, you know, where we had different running backs come in for different situations.
Great point. Great bloodlines with Connor Hayward too. Obviously, the brother of Cam Hayward on the Steelers. So, you know, he is going to be, you know, a player to watch this season just because, like Connor just brought up, you know, he could almost play the role of kind of like what Khalid Hill played for Michigan the last couple of years, is kind of a short yardage guy, you know, third and short, fourth and short. Put Connor Hayward in there. He's a big body. He can bang at the line of scrimmage, get forward, get the short yardage gains that the Spartans will need for their upcoming season. So he certainly is a player to watch at a very specialized role. So I like that take as well, Connor. I really do. Switching gears here as well. LeGarrette Blount left practice for the Lions yesterday with an undisclosed injury, and this was the second injury in, I believe, 3 days for the Detroit Lions. It's clear that Matt Patricia's practices are a little bit more intense than Jim Caldwell's were when he was the head coach of the Detroit Lions, and I guess I just have one question as it pertains to, you know, the LeGarrette Blount and the Marvin Jones injuries, and that's, does the new physicality of the Detroit Lions training camp, does it concern you if you're a Lions fan? You know, I wouldn't be too worried about LeGarrette Blount or Marvin Jones being ready to start the season. You know, LeGarrette Blount was cleared to return to practice today, I read earlier today. And then, you know, Marvin Jones, Matt Patricia seemed to say it wasn't too serious for him as well. But I guess my big question for you is, are you a little bit nervous? Just the new physicality of the Lions training camp, you know, Oklahoma drills, a lot of contact early on in the season, training camp season, I should say. And, you know, do you think the Tigers, do you think the Lions depth will take a hit just because some attrition in training camp? I'll give you my thoughts on that in just a couple minutes, but we'll throw it to Alec. Alec, are you worried at all about the new physicality of the Detroit Lions practices?
Although I do entrust, like, I put my trust in Matt Patricia as our head coach, I already think he's doing a better job than Caldwell already.
Agreed.
Yep.
Agreed.
I think that the heavily physical practices, it makes me really nervous because I can see a long-term injury stem from this. I can see maybe like a star player get injured from this, sort of like what happened to Teddy Bridgewater. But when wasn't that during training camp?
Sure, I think that was a non-contact injury, though, so maybe that's a little different, but
okay,
I see your point,
yeah.
Sure.
Even so, I still could see a star player getting injured, and we definitely don't need that come this season,
right.
Especially because we were plagued by injuries last season. In every position, even our defense, we had injuries, and our offensive lineman core was plagued with injuries, and
yep.
I just think that we should maybe lower it just a little bit, like with maybe a little bit less of the Oklahoma drills, a little bit, you know. But I just want to have the whole crew there come this season, this upcoming season. I just don't want any for sure injuries. I forgot what player on the Chargers, he was sidelined with a Achilles injury for the whole season. I can't think of his name right now, but I'm just afraid something like that might come from Matt Patricia's overly physical practices.
Sure, and to confirm what you were talking about, that's Jason Verrett, the cornerback for the Chargers, who tore his Achilles, and he'll be out the entire season. That really hurts. You know, that was a conditioning injury again, though not necessarily full contact, but I certainly see your point, and I think it's a good take. Connor, any thoughts?
The physicality in training camp is, you know, it's definitely variable from team to team. You know,
sure.
Some teams like
sure.
to take it easy. I don't think it should be, you shouldn't be like sounding alarms or anything like that. I mean, Marvin Jones is a receiver. I mean, he hasn't really gotten any really bad injuries. I mean, it might just be a tweak. Again, you got to remember, these guys are coming off the off season where they've been, you know, they've been working out for sure, but it's not been the same, you know, arduous work that they've been doing all NFL season. And again, with the same kind of thing with LeGarrette Blount, but LeGarrette Blount is an older back for one. He's a physical back too, and he does have injury history. So, I mean, that him getting hurt in camp doesn't surprise me because, you know, it's going to happen. Just the style he plays and just given his injury history. Now, if by next week we're talking about like five or six guys have gone down with injuries pertaining to some sort of contact, like bruises and sprains and things like that, then I think it's time to sound the alarm and saying, well, maybe we should dial it back a bit. It's only training camp. But for now, I mean, It's football. Injuries happen, especially in training camp. Every single year, there's like the happy period of training camp came, and then there's the period of dread between training camp and like the final week of preseason, where like I sure hope my favorite player doesn't blow out a knee or something like that. So I mean, it's just part of the game. I wouldn't be overly concerned if I were a Lions fan just yet. I mean, these relatively minor injuries from the sounds of it too. So.
Great point. You know what? I'm going to hold off on giving my take. I'll give it for you in just a couple minutes. But I think it is interesting to note that, multiple beat writers have kind of reported for the Detroit Lions that practices now are more physical than they've ever been. I remember Carlos Monterrez writing an article not too long ago about he was worried Matt Patricia might lose the players before the season even started just based on how much running he made them do. So I certainly wouldn't say that, has more to do with physicality per se, but I think it's interesting just the way Matt Patricia coaches up his players, and he certainly isn't shy of physicality in practices, but yet you saw what Tease Tabor said about him yesterday. These guys think really highly of Matt Patricia, so I'm not overly concerned about the running standpoint. And then as it pertains to the physicality, what I want to do here? Let's hit our second break, and when we come back, I'll give you my thoughts on the physicality of the practices, just because, I think there are a couple points to note, and I think Connor touched on a couple, and I think Alec touched on a couple, so I'll chime in with those as well. You're listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back. So we kind of left off that topic talking about the physicality of the Detroit Lion practices and what my take is on Matt Patricia's new style of practice that we really never, ever saw from Jim Caldwell in his 4 years as Detroit Lions head coach. And you know what my opinion is? I'm not overly worried about it, just like Connor brought up. If a lot of guys start going down with injuries, then that's exactly right. It's probably the time to tone it down a little bit because we're not even into the preseason yet, folks. So to see a lot of guys getting hurt certainly isn't what we want. But the way I look at it is, this is Bob Quinn's third year as the GM of the Detroit Lions. And although it's Matt Patricia's first year, Bob Quinn's been building up the depth of this team the last two seasons. And unless something super significant like Matt Stafford blows out his ACL, which I wouldn't be worried about from the physicality of practices anyways because he's in a non-contact jersey. So unless something just cataclysmic happens to the Detroit Lions in practice, I'm not overly concerned about it just because I think at this point it's on Bob Quinn to show us, injuries are going to happen in the NFL and we need to have depth at, positions such as offensive line. Guys go down all the time as we saw last season with, Taylor Decker missing the first 12 weeks or whatever it was. Wide receiver, the Lions were pretty lucky, I'd say, last season. Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones, Golden Tate really were all healthy for the majority of the season, so that wasn't too much of an issue. But injuries happen, man. So I'm not too worried about that. I think at this point, if Matt Patricia thinks it's in the best interest of the team and he wants to improve the toughness of the squad, then I fully support that. And you know what? That comes with the risk, obviously that injuries could happen. But for me at this point, it's on Bob Quinn to kind of fill those holes if need be, and as well as just elevate depth guys that he's taken the last couple of years. So, Alec, your thoughts?
The one thing that I do like about the upping of the physicality is that it sheds the image that the Lions are soft, because that's been a common label that has been placed on the Lions pretty much ever since Barry Sanders retired. Because I don't remember the Lions ever being a running back friendly team. They've
absolutely
always
not
been a pass first.
Not since Barry left. Exactly right.
They haven't ran the ball as nearly as frequently as when Barry Sanders was playing. And I think now that, like, when they're upping the physicality, they're going to finally shed that image. And now they're going to actually give some of the load to the running backs like LeGarrette Blount and Ameer Abdullah. I'm hoping that they can prove to be a more physical team come this season, because I remember, like, these past couple seasons, our defense has been pushed around and they've been getting taken advantage of, especially when I can remember the Seattle Seahawks in 2015 when we lost that game. We were getting pushed around by Russell Wilson and their whole offense. Like, sure. They were just pushing them around. And I honestly think that Matt Patricia is going to beef them up and get them ready for this upcoming season.
And let me kind of piggyback on what you just said. You know, one way to look at it is the best defense is a great offense, and it's hard to keep your offense on the field if you can't run the ball. So, you know what, I've really loved the emphasis that Bob Quinn's put on, you know, kind of building the running game ever since he's gotten here, and I love the Kerryon Johnson draft pick, and I'm hoping he can be that running back the Lions have, that's really eluded the Detroit Lions ever since Barry Sanders left. You know, seems like first and second round pick every couple of years, guy never pans out. You know, Kevin Jones and Javid Best, you know, Mikel LeSueur, and no one's really stuck. And I'm kind of getting the same vibes with Amir Abdullah, to be honest with you. You know, to me, Amir Abdullah is just a less good Theo Riddick. He catches passes out of the background, out of the backfield, but he fumbles, you know. So Amir Abdullah doesn't really do a whole lot for me at this point either. So if he wants to stick around for me, he's got to show me something this year as well. Connor, any thoughts?
Well, one thing, don't be slandering Javid Best. He had so many concussions. He was a beast.
That's fair. That's fair.
He was one of the more fun Lions players the last like 10 years or so. But I mean, the other thing too is with the Lions, most of my family is of Lions fans, like my dad's side, because he's from up here. But like, you'd see like when you watch a game, when I watch a game with my family, it'd be like, oh yeah, all right, they're doing well, and then here comes the collapse. Their biggest problem was they would do one of two things. Lions would, the first half of the game, they jump out to this very nice lead.
Yep.
They've jumped out to a real nice lead, look great. They'd be beating on some team that they had no business competing with, and then third quarter all around, and they'd still be passing the ball 18 times, and you know, you can't run out the clock passing the ball. The other way it would happen would be they would be losing bad in the first half of the game, and then the second half of the game it'd be all desperation, and they make the final score look respectable. So you know,
that's exactly right.
Some of the writers say, and even some fans complain like, oh, Patricia's running him too much. He's making it too physical. I think that's exactly what the Lions need, because you watch their games and they would collapse in one half or the other. You know, if you're running, you're building up your endurance, you're building conditioning, things like that. And I think the Lions desperately need that. I mean, the roster that they have is good enough to compete with most of the teams in the NFL, but if your entire defense or half your offense is dead by the halfway point in the third quarter, you're not gonna win even against some of the worst teams, though, because they'll just chip away. I mean, I don't really understand the complaints. Like, again, it's training camp. There are going to be injuries in training camp. It happens every single year. But I don't see the need to panic right away.
Agreed. And you know what? I understand that you're a Miami Dolphins fan, basically the sunny weather Cleveland Browns. So you feel my pain, certainly, as a football fan. But, you know, I think what's really interesting that you brought up, I don't know if I would agree that, you know, lack of conditioning was why the Lions ran out of juice in a lot of third quarters. But, you know, certainly a problem that drove me nuts as a Lions fan was I thought Jim Caldwell was one of the worst coaches in the NFL when it came to making halftime adjustments. And
well, he was one of the most conservative. It was well known. For the second they hired him, he was one of the more conservative coaches in the NFL. If it's third and two, he's not going to draw up some elaborate pass play. He's going to try to run up the middle. Like you're not expecting, you know, little giants to come from the mind of Jim Caldwell. I remember going to a Dolphins Lions game a couple years ago, and he ran a fake punt, and I don't think anyone in the stadium expected it because Jim Caldwell doesn't take risks as a coach. So I mean. that's just who he was.
Isa Abdul Kadus ran that ball. Rest in peace. No, he didn't die, but I think he went to the Dolphins, didn't he? Abdul Kadus? No?
Oh yeah, no, yes, yeah. He did. He did.
He was on the line.
He did for like a year and a half, and then he blew out his knee.
Oh really?
Yeah.
That kid could fly. I will tell you that. You know, he didn't have the greatest, you know, ball hawking skills. That was back when Glover Quinn and James Ahedibo were the two starting safeties, and Abdul Kadus kind of played as a depth player because Ahedibo had some injuries. That dude could fly. So that was great memories here, Connor. Great memories. But yeah, you know what? I guess that brings me to another point as it pertains to Detroit Lions football is, you know, let's hope under Matt Patricia their scheme's a little better coming out of halftime, you know, halftime adjustments. And, you know, one other thing that really stuck out to me that Matt Patricia's emphasized in training camp so far is goal line situations. You know, the Lions have not been able to run the ball since Barry Sanders left. And, you know, kind of like what Connor said, it's basically a given when Jim Caldwell's your head coach. Jim Caldwell's never been great at running the football anywhere he's been. So, you know, it's interesting that the Lions are taking these strides to be able to run the ball better. And hopefully, you know, hopefully when it gets down to goal line situations, they'll be able to finally punch the ball in. Because I just remember a game last season, Detroit Lions, Pittsburgh Steelers. I think it was a Monday night game. Matt Stafford passed for over 400 yards, and I don't think the Lions even turned the ball over. But they lost, I think it was 21-15 because they kicked 5 field goals because they couldn't get the ball into the end zone to save their lives once they got inside the 10 and the 5-yard line.
Yeah, and that's the other problem you have when you have a conservative coach. When you get into the red zone, there's like a certain element of risk you have to take. There's a couple of times, especially if you don't have a running game. If you have no running games like the Lions have had, you have to get a little crafty with the passing, and they just didn't do it. It'd be like little dink and dumps passes that it just would not get over the goal line. Or like, I can't remember what game it was, but I remember they got Golden Tate or something, and he ended up like on the 2 and like reached out and he missed the goal line and they lost the game because of it. I mean, it doesn't help when your coach doesn't want to take the extra risk. I think Patricia is going to definitely change that around for them. And if they get the running game going, then that will help them just as much more.
Sure, certainly. Real quick, before we get into our weekend winners, what are your guys' thoughts on Eric Ebron not being with the team? And what do you expect to see out of the tight end position? Alec, any thoughts?
He was inconsistent, like to say the least, these last couple seasons with us. He did kind of tear it up last season. Like, he did a lot better last season than he did the seasons before that. I don't really see the team doing that much different now that Eric Ebron's gone. I mean, he definitely had some rock hands missing a bunch of passes, and it definitely led to me saying, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, there's
definitely to rip your hair out.
Yeah. There's definitely a bunch of those moments throughout the season when you'd see like a easy slant play. It would be like 3rd and 6 and he would just drop it and you'd just be like, oh my God, why? Like, you know, like that. And I definitely see a bunch of tight ends that they'll be able to shine this year now that Ebron's gone, because Ebron was the number one tight end target,
sure,
even though, yeah, despite all of that. And so now I just see new rookies and like new tight ends coming in to tear it up this season.
Sure. Connor, you see the tight end position being a big spot of production for the Lions, or do you think it'll be primarily blocking?
I don't know. I mean, they look like they are a lot of relative unknowns. There's a lot of young guys here. I think honestly you won't be able to tell until preseason comes around. I think the Lions and Stafford in particular, even his years there, I think he's been more dependent on his wide receivers,
sure,
than tight ends anyways. It's just kind of the way he plays.
Yeah, none of his tight ends could ever catch the ball, signed Brandon Pettigrew.
Yeah,
Ebron.
I think there's a chance, but I mean, they look like a bunch of relatively unknowns.
Sure. And you know what? Here's kind of my opinion on the whole cutting Eric Ebron. From the standpoint of, you know, our tight end production, I didn't like it simply because he had 1 year left on his deal, and I didn't think it would hurt to keep him around for one more year. But schematically, the way I look at it, Eric Ebron, to me, I just don't like his mold as a player because, you know, he's supposed to be this athletic tight end, but he can't block. And the way I look at it, he's not nearly as athletic as a wide receiver. So for me, I'm more interested in seeing more 3 wide receiver sets, you know, Kenny Galladay getting more snaps, and kind of, I don't want to say getting rid of the tight end position, because I'm really intrigued by Mike Roberts, you know, the second-year player out of Toledo. Kid's got massive hands. If you've ever seen, like, remember Kyle Meinke, I remember a beat writer for the Lions putting his hand up to Mike Roberts. The guy's got unbelievably large hands, and he's one of the best MAC tight ends ever. So I think he's an interesting player to watch. But for me, I'm not looking for too much from the tight end position. I don't even expect to see pass-catching tight ends in the game a lot for the Lions. I'd rather see a lot more 3 wide receiver sets with Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, and Kenny Galladay. All right, shifting gears, our weekend winners for this Hall of Fame weekend here in Detroit. So I guess I'll start off. My weekend winner, I don't know if you guys saw it, was Chipper Jones. Atlanta Braves third baseman, inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday with his wife, set to give birth, I believe it was today, to, I believe, a son. So let me check up on that real quick. Yep, Chipper Jones names his son Cooper for Hall of Fame induction. That was 15 hours ago from MLB.com. So to me, that's a great story, and I guess Chipper Jones is my weekend winner. Alec, anything?
Yeah, I'd have to say the same thing. I mean, having two of, like, the biggest defining moments of your life happening, like, pretty much almost simultaneously.
Sure.
Like, that's just got to be emotions overload, you know, honestly. Like, I just, the emotions pouring for him. I got to congratulate him on the birth of his son and his Hall of Fame induction, because that is just, that's absolutely amazing for them and his family.
You know what, I guess we can broaden it a little bit, and we can say all the Hall of Fame inductees, you know, Chipper Jones, Jim Thome, Vlad Guerrero, Jack Morris, Trevor Hoffman, you know, Alan Trammell, all those guys, I guess, are my weekend winners. I hope I didn't steal your thunder, Connor or Ian, if you have any thoughts.
No, mine's going to be completely out of left field here. So this past Saturday was the Arena Bowl, and the Washington Valor, in their second year of existence, won the Arena Bowl. They're my weekend winners.
Is this football?
Yep.
Who's the who's the Washington Valor's quarterback?
Not a clue. You know what's funny? No, it's, most arena football teams are like washed up NFL stars, but This is like mostly just like their team was made up of like mostly like secondary collegiate players. So it was actually kind of interesting to see that their team was really, really young.
Any names you recognize?
No. There was a couple of guys that played on like practice squad for the Seahawks and the Panthers, but that's about it.
Sure. Ian, you got a pick?
So my weekend winner would have to be Dennis Rodman. He was actually hilarious on the roast of Bruce Willis this weekend. If you don't know about the roasts, then they roast the other roasters first, and then they roast the actual, you know, person being roasted. So in this case, Bruce Willis. And he teared up at the end, as he always does when he makes a public speech. But if you haven't seen it, you should definitely go check it out, because Dennis Rodman brought the heat on this roast.
Awesome. Awesome. Great. Great take from you as well. And you know what, boys? That's about all the time we have, about 30 seconds left in the show. So, hope I didn't do too bad hosting. You know, mediocre at best, I would say, certainly. But, you know, we can't all be Al Martin, so. Until tomorrow, we are on a 23-hour break. So, all of our listeners out there in listener land, have a great day. And be easy, people. We'll hear from you tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow.